All right, we're live.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the third episode of Bitcoin Kindergarten. Today, me and Optimus have a really special guest. Katie, say what's up.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
What's up, Katie, guys?
Katie and Anna is one of the I almost said founding fathers. she's one of the founders of she has a Toxic Ladies Bitcoin group. It's a place where a lot of the girl Bitcoiners go, and on Bitcoin Twitter, from what I've seen, it's mostly guys, so it's nice seeing girls in Bitcoin as well. And Katie's obviously one of the really cool ones. One thing she told me, she went to Craig Wright's court case and actually got chased out of it.
Yeah, that's the first time I saw Katie. That was pretty legendary.
Yeah. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was absolutely cool experience. Back then, I was actually living in Mexico already. Before that, I lived in Miami, so part of my family was there. And I kind of needed to go back. And then I saw the court scheduled court hearing for Craig Wright scheduled for like, it was last year, June. I was like, well, I'm just going to put together go to this court. I showed up, and obviously there is like a privacy for this hearing. Like, you can bring your phone, you can bring your computer in. Well, I'm from Russia. So somehow, I don't know what happened, but I got through, x-ray machine kind of with my phone. Got into the courtroom and was live tweeting through the whole court hearing. And then it started at 9 a.m. About 4 p.m., we're still there. And Craig Wright's lawyer is like looking at me weirdly and going slowly to the judge and tells him something into the ear and like looking at me still. I'm like, well, I'm in trouble. So apparently, my tweets went viral and he saw them, like, lawyer. Craig Wright actually saw me online tweeting that. I'm like running out of courtroom realizing that I'm in trouble. And I know there are like multiple stairs. I'm not taking the elevator because like it's leading right to the court guards. I'm trying to find another exit or something. Then I'm just running through the door trying to, if whatever, I'm running away. And four court guards running behind me, one of them catching me as I'm opening the door to exit. At the court, like throwing me to the bench, give me her phone, give me her password. Like, I realized they already have like my picture and stuff, and obviously they know my Twitter handle. So then I was like, all right, I'm in trouble. I'm totally in trouble. So they got me back into the courtroom, and judge is like, okay, Katie, come to the microphone. And I'm like, shit. So I actually made it to the transcript, like the guy who's scripting the whole court hearing was printing all that stuff. It's pretty hilarious. So he was like, all right, Katie, don't worry. And I'm like, you know, obviously stressing out, not knowing what's going to happen after that. And judge is like, it's all right, Katie, tell me about you. What are you doing here? And I'm like, really sorry, judge. My English is not very good. I might not understand what you're saying. I'm from Russia. He's like, it's fine, Katie. Don't be nervous. You understand English. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I didn't know. I didn't take pictures. So he's like, it's fine. It's on us too. Like, four court guards, x-ray machine and all that stuff. And somehow you still had the phone in the courtroom. So the court guards are going to get in trouble too. And I didn't get in trouble. My lawyer said I was supposed to get 30 days and $5,000 fine. And I'm still here. I'm not in jail. Good thing.
Good time.
And then I obviously went to second court hearing. I decided to spend the whole summer in Miami just because of all those hearings. When I showed up to second hearing, I was trying to look like completely different, like put my hair a different way, wear different clothes, like completely different style. So I'm walking into the courthouse. The court guard is like, oh, Katie, where's your phone? Shit. And then I'm walking into the courtroom, and the same judge is like, oh, Katie, you're back. I'm glad. I'm like, shit. It didn't work.
That is actually hilarious. All right, well, let's talk about toxic ladies. So, I think we got you on here because one of our friends, Proof of Steph, was giving us jokes about how last week with Hoddle was just a bunch of boy talk. And I know we don't need to get into gender specifics on why, you know, ladies should be Bitcoiners, but what's a shill or the pitch that you do for the women around you that you've been congregating at Toxic Ladies?
Toxic Ladies actually ended up being a pretty cool experience that I didn't expect to have. I was just putting together a group. And I was like, that's something different. Why don't we have toxic, like, why don't we have ladies pleb chat, pretty much? So first we put all the, like, Proof of Steph and I were the first people there, obviously. And then we got some more girls. And then Bitcoiners from Twitter, like, started reaching out and be like, hey, like, my wife wants to be in, like, hurry. And I'm like, okay. So now it's, like, 25 of us. Some of us, like, hardcore Bitcoiners. Some of us, extra heart of hardcore Bitcoiners who wants to learn more. And overall, it's been pretty cool. Yeah, not toxic. It's kind of more of a onwards. I mean, I was called toxic a gajillion times for all my life views in terms of, like, anti-feminism, anti bullshit, and all that stuff. So, like, yeah, if we're being called toxic for being kind of truth seekers and reasonable, we might as well come out and own it. Of course.
Yeah. I agree. So let's talk about, you said you got some, what'd you say, you got a few people onboarded this last week, didn't you?
Yeah, so after you guys asked me if I would love to talk about, like, onboarding process and people who just come into the space, I was like, damn, like, I've been surrounded, like, I've been in the bubble of Bitcoiners for quite some time now. Like, all my friends are Bitcoiners, literally all of them. Which makes sense because, you know, I moved from Russia. I kind of abandoned my previous life there. And after that, I got into Bitcoin almost right away. So I made all new friends in this country through Bitcoin. So I was like, all right, it's time to actually talk with newbies and, like, try to get them on. And somehow all three people that I've been talking to ended up being girls. And I actually think that girls naturally not very interested in Bitcoin. Like, you kind of have to have a lot of this somewhat masculine mentality at some point, like, in some cases. So I think we don't have a lot of girls in the space, like, for reason, obviously. But my sister was into that, but I was actually going through experience with her, asking her questions, made her doing all that stuff, like, by herself. And then another girl I also onboarded recently, she's mom of two. She literally got her first Bitcoin through local Bitcoins 2 days after she gave birth to her second child. I was like, how did you do that? Because, like, there is no onboarding on ramps in Russia, like, actual on ramps. You only have to go through local Bitcoins or, like, OTC. She figured it out. I mean, she's a very smart girl. She's pretty good at math and technology, so she got it. Yeah, I just wanted to see what's going on in the world right now and what kind of mistakes people would do in their first steps and what seemed to be confusing. And, like, we know all the resources and all the companies you need to go through to be safe and to be okay. But I was like, I don't know what's in Bitcoin spaces, like, how it's looks like from somebody who doesn't know where to go. And I actually identified really bad things, asking my sister and asking Anastasia, that you guys know. Mm-hmm.
So did you get any question in particular, like, the first thing they asked you?
Oh yeah, my sister kind of, like, into stocks lately, and she's like, but Katie, like, how am I supposed to buy $50 of Bitcoin if it costs, like, $9,000? And I was like, all right, this is the first thing. Because all the people who are into stocks to buy a full share before Cash App came out with their Shivers stocks. But yeah, my sister was like, I can't afford to buy $9,000 right now. I'm like, okay, so Bitcoin actually consists of 100 million Satoshis, and you can buy any amount, you can buy a dollar worth of Bitcoin and stack sats.
Yeah, well, perfect segue, Katie, because that was one of our questions, is you don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin and you can stack sats. But you answered the whole thing, so that's a good one. But
I wanted to add something on. In terms of you don't have to buy a whole Bitcoin, I know on Cash App I can buy one penny's worth of Bitcoin, which is, you know, obviously the lowest amount of USD. So it's like you can really buy any amount you really want. You can either buy a penny's worth or $1 million worth, you know. There's no limit to what you can and can't buy.
Yeah, and me coming from a teacher's monthly salary is $200, I understand that my teacher would never be able to invest into stock market, because like, how am I supposed to buy $2,400 share of Amazon if my salary is $200 a month, right? So Bitcoin is like for everyone, for real. Like, it's not only for rich, it's only for those who have good income or wealthy wealth or savings. It's for everybody. You can buy $1, you can buy $5, you can buy 100 rubles. Anything is for you.
And that's one of the things that is really exciting about Bitcoin, is that it opens up the financial world to all these people who previously didn't have it before. You know, especially people in third world countries. I remember your little talk about toxic ladies made me remember an article I read when I first got into Bitcoin, which really, you know, touched me and saw how life changing this could be. And the story was a lady, and I don't remember exactly what country this was, but it was somewhere in the Middle East, I'm pretty sure. And she was not allowed to handle her finances. Her husband was supposed to do that for her. And she eventually started getting money. I don't remember how, but she would little by little buy Bitcoin and hide it from her husband. And when she got enough money, she was able to flee the country and afford a better life for herself in a better country. And I just think that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful story, yeah. Absolutely.
Right. I think it's a good point to say that you don't need to have a lot of money. You just need to adjust your behavior. And as most of us Bitcoiners have learned, is that over time you adjust your time preference. And so by that is you change your behavior and you sacrifice little things here and there so that you can buy more Bitcoin, so that your future can potentially be better. And it's more of a like a personal choice than just needing a lot of money. It's like, okay, I think I want to save for my future. And, you know, Bitcoin is hope. It's changed my life.
Delayed gratification is really big thing that a lot of us took from it. And I thought it was not part of my life before. I was like, no, I was a regular kid who would spend money. But then I kind of thought through my previous experience as a child. And I remember, like, I made $1,000 when I was 9. And like, if I was just 9-year-old kid that didn't care about the future, I would probably spend it on cool stuff like Lego, I don't know, games or stuff. But I was already doing some sailing, and I was like, I'm just gonna invest it into my boat and get a better boat for sailing. And next year I got into national team and started making money out of it. And when I realized it was kind of delayed gratification back in the day, I was like, wow, good job, 9-year-old Katie. I'm proud of you.
Then
I had the same experience. I had the same experience at 21. You guys probably know my story that like I never ever tried alcohol in my life. And it was like a bet with my mom when I was 9. I made this bet that I'm not going to try any alcohol, cigarettes or drugs or anything until 21. And if I don't, I will win $1,000. When I got those 10K, my sister had the same bet, and she got a car. And I decided to buy language school in the United States, like buy a course in language school and immigrate to the United States. This money. So like, that's kind of delayed gratification. now I like care about, and only when I get big returns, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna invest it. I'm just, you should not buy this another kills.
Katie's born for this.
Oh, I actually think I just had all the right experiences in life bring me here, to bring me to Bitcoin. Like, my life literally pushed me to Bitcoin, and there was no chance I would stay away from it if I actually learned.
Agreed. Nick, we cut you off a few times. Did you want to add something?
I did, but I forgot it. So I'll circle back to it if I remember it.
How about you tried to onboard some friends this week, and you had a pretty good experience with your friends and your family. Let's get into that one.
Yeah, so I was talking with my parents first, because my dad doesn't understand Bitcoin at all, and he likes to try and like rile me up about it. And he was like, I walked downstairs one day and he looked at me, and the first thing he said was, "Hey Nick, how much money in Bitcoin have you lost?" And we just got into this big argument about how, like, I'm telling him that he has the potential to lose a lot of his savings for retirement because of inflation and hyperinflation, blah blah blah. And he's telling me that I don't know what I'm talking about. And then he said he doesn't understand how he doesn't understand how Bitcoin can be like the world reserve currency. And I was like, well, you barely know how to use your iPad and your iPhone. So you got a long ways to learn. You know, you got a long ways to go before you realize how big Bitcoin is actually going to get. And then he was saying how, like, he just doesn't trust Bitcoin. And I was like, well, do you know what fractional reserve banking is? Do you know what quantitative easing is? And he said no. And I was like, well, Dad, you got to learn how the current financial system works and the history of money to really understand how important Bitcoin can be. So I took the Bitcoin Standard and I'm rereading it, and I'm highlighting through really important parts as well as annotating and writing little notes. And I was curious and I posted a picture of it. I just posted a picture of the book and me reading it down by the water where I live, trying to set up a little bait to see if anyone on my Snapchat would take it. And I did. I got a kid who I haven't talked to in years, a kid I used to play soccer with. He hit me up and he was like, man, why don't you just trade stocks and options? And we got into a little conversation and he was open-minded to it. I sent him over some podcasts and some slideshows and stuff. And when I get back in town, I'm going to meet up with him and tell him all about Bitcoin. And I'm going to lend him my copy of the Bitcoin Standard so he can read through it. And yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
There's just one point with your dad. It's funny. Because as I said before we started, that us young ones, the young guns out here, and our friends, it's like we're living in a new paradigm. We've shed the old thinking of the old world, and we're working on this new economics and this new world. And we can see it so plainly, but people are still stuck with that old mentality, and they still believe those old myths of the old world that got them to where they are. And it's like your dad's a prime example of it. And it's, you know, it hurts us because they're our loved ones. And we want to just shake them and be like, man, like, listen to us. Like, we got the golden ticket. You know, we got the answer, guys. Like, come join us. And like, you only need to buy a little bit of Bitcoin at a time and just, you know, just keep being consistent and it'll do wonders for you. And they're like, yeah, like, shut up. You're an idiot. And it's just funny how we all experience basically the same thing over and over, and we're still just trying to help people.
It's funny to me because it's like, you know, my dad's a boomer. I'm a zoomer. there's a huge age gap there. And it's funny to me how my dad has lived his whole life not knowing anything about the financial system. And here I am, 20 years old, getting educated with everyone else on Bitcoin Twitter on, you know, what money actually is. And I tell him, I'm like, man, you know, like, I'm telling them about the Bitcoin standard that I'm going to let them read. And I'm like, dude, if you look, the US dollar has served its purpose, but it's clearly time to move on. And the money, the hardest money, looking throughout history, the hardest money with the best stock to flow always wins, no matter what. And easy money, like, societies collapse under easy money, and the money we have right now is very, very easy money, and it's just so plain and simple for us, because we, you know, we've studied this, we have the knowledge, but it's something very hard to comprehend. It's like, it's almost unbelievable, and they're just, like, in denial.
Normalcy bias.
Well, in my...
Go, Katie.
My case, my dad is kind of pretty red pill because he's kind of well educated on the finance system. My mom knows nothing about this, and she only like respects Bitcoin and knows it's a cool thing because she like trusts me and know that I would not recommend a bad thing. So maybe you should try this different approach in being like because it's probably gonna kind of push your dad apart from yourself and all the way around, right? And none of you want it because you love each other, your family. So maybe you should like come to him and be like, dude, I understand that you don't want to learn it, but like, this is something that I value a lot. And if you love me, please just let me fucking try to educate you on that. Like, just trust me here. And maybe that's something that will convince him. It's not something that like been helping with that.
I think like my mom is pretty open to it, but she doesn't understand that, like, she thinks that, oh, Bitcoin is going to go up and it's going to skyrocket and do whatever my son says, but that's not going to affect me if I don't touch it. And that's not always true, you know. As a Bitcoin goes up, the US dollar is going to go down in purchasing power, and that's going to affect them whether they want it to or not. And moving on to, we have a question in the chat that ties into this from Coin Education, who says, can you give some historical examples of money converging to the most saleable and perhaps expand on what attributes in particular led to it? So what comes to mind is two examples from the Bitcoin standard. One of them was from the Yap Islands. I believe it was the Yap Islands. And for money, they had these huge stones that were imported. And they were rare because they were so big. They took like I don't remember the exact amount, but it took a ton of people to move those stones into the town. And you can't move them around. They're not very divisible. So they used those stones for large purchases, and they would leave the stones in the middle of the town because they were so big no one was going to steal them, as well as everyone in the town knew who they belonged to. And if you sold it, you let the town know, and the town kind of came to, you know, consensus that, okay, this stone got sold to this person, and he or she is the new owner. But there was someone named, I believe his name was David O'Keefe. He came along and saw this, and he went to where they were getting these big stones from, and he would blow them up. He would break them up into smaller, more portable units, and he kept taking them to the island to try and get people to exchanged them for goods. And the island chief was like, no, you can't do, you know, you just can't do that. You're going to flood our market with these new stones. And eventually the island kind of was fighting, you know, whether, you know, that was a good thing for him to do. Like, should he be allowed to do that? Should he not be? Eventually, people started accepting it, and it flooded the market because he just kept importing new stones. And, you know, obviously, the more stones, you know, it, the inflation went up, is what I'm trying to say. And so the stock to flow and scarcity are the first building blocks to becoming an asset in money. Yeah. So I'll read that again because I just read that really fast. But another thing is there were these beads in Africa, glass beads, and that's what they used for money. And it was a very hard money with a good stock to flow. And then the Europeans came in, and they were able to produce these glass beads super cheap back home. But then when they brought them to Africa, that, you know, they had a ton of them. So the inflation went up, and they were able to buy up everything. And then they flooded the market with all these beads, crashing the purchasing power of it. So yeah, like, those are just some examples of what I was trying to get at. And the attributes that led to it were, you know, the stock to flow, the hardness of it means, like, you can't have too much of it. It has to be rare and, you know, hard to get. Like, for example, paper money today, it's really easy to get. You just put paper in a printer and print it. Whereas gold or Bitcoin, you have to mine it. You know, there's a lot of computing power or, like, physical power that goes into it, and it costs a lot of money and time to create that.
Yeah, and just to bring it into the real world, or into real time, that's basically what's happening right now with the dollar and Bitcoin. The dollar's getting inflated with trillions upon trillions of dollars, and Bitcoin is scarce and it's hard to make, or actually you can't make more. And so as the dollar is becoming inflated, the dollar price is plummeting, or will soon plummet. Like, there'll be some effects that we'll see in the future. And we just had the halving in Bitcoin. And so we have one dollar, or we have the dollar that's inflating, and we have Bitcoin that's a deflationary money. So we're going to see the effects of this happening in real time. The Bitcoin price will most likely go up, and the dollar price, we don't really know what it's going to be, because we have, you know, government officials that are trying to make it seem stable, but they can't fight the laws of economics. And so it's going to be a crazy show to watch.
Yeah, those examples were beautiful, but they're, like, from back in the day. In our world, we have a lot of examples that, like, our generation haven't seen. This is probably where, like, I got my experiences that led me to Bitcoin. And this is why your dad can't really see it, because, like, whole life has been into living in a safe financial system that kept it going for so long. He doesn't really understand that one day it might blow up. It might not be the case for the next 10 years. It might not be the case for 20 years. And this is something that Americans need to realize, that, like, yes, you were safe for a long time, but, like, it can't keep it longer than that. And I had experience on my lifetime so many times already, that's ridiculous. Like, my currency, ruble, right, in my country, when I was 3, it was 6 rubles per dollar. Today, it's 74 rubles per dollar. This is crazy. The purchasing power went down, like, insanely. And even closer example, in 2015, I was already studying economics. That was literally my major in university. And in my sophomore year, I think it was after sophomore year, I went to Spain for Palma de Mallorca for, like, 2 months for training, because I was the team on Russian team. And obviously all my savings were in rubles. All my money were in rubles on my debit card. And while I was in Spain, in the period of 2 weeks, Russian ruble dropped 50% compared to US dollar. So, like, wow. It was, I believe it was like 36 went to 74 per dollar. I was like, wait a second. So I was in this country for like a couple of weeks. Now I have twice less money on my debit card because my country somehow got poorer 2x in the last 2 weeks. Like, something is wrong with this. Like, it does not sound real. And something is definitely broken in the financial system. And I was like really good at macroeconomics in my university. Like, I got A, macroeconomics one, macroeconomics two. Then I got back to university. I'm like, wait a second. Like, all I learned there was all bullshit. And I dropped out.
And, like, going off that, you know, we talk about how shitty it is. And going back to what Coin Education asked that I spoke too quickly about, he said, so stock to flow and scarcity are the first building blocks to an asset becoming money, correct? And yeah, you look at, you look through history at civilizations, and the civilizations that always flourish and prosper are the ones that use hard and sound money. Civilizations that don't really prosper and actually kind of go through some dark ages all use unsound money. They use easy money. And to be honest, like, this whole fiat experiment that we've been living in, it's been full of war, corruption, like corrupt leaders, governments trying to take as much of your liberty and freedom as they can. You know, we got, like, it makes me think back to Jeffrey Epstein, the sex predator who had the island, and he was assassinated in his cell because who knows, you know, what world leaders he would have snitched out, and it just would have caused such a, you know, I don't, who knows what would have even happened, but it's just like, under a sound money where it's harder for these people to rise to power, it's just society and humans are able to flourish much more because they're able to save more for themselves, and everything's just so much better.
Yeah, society thrives when people are able to accumulate capital. And if your capital is getting slowly drained via inflation, then you can't really save for your future. And this is a good segue to something I wanted to bring up from our friend Black Bull on Twitter. And he had this good comment of what BTC does, Bitcoin. And he says, BTC is about stopping theft through inflation, confiscation, and censorship, and allowing the wealth gap to start to regress to a more natural state, much, much smaller than now, by ending the Cantillon effect. And that, like, perfectly sums it up, that no longer are we the plebs out here, the 99% getting our wealth stolen via inflation and those closest to the money spigot. And so, as we say on Twitter, the next renaissance will seems to be ushering in.
Yeah. And
yeah, I mean, you also gotta look at, like, taxation. Like, it's gonna be a lot harder to tax people on an unconfiscatable money where you can not only hide stuff easier, but, like, it limits the government on taxation. And it's really nice living in America, because if shit hits the fan and they, like, let's just say I'm glad to have my Second Amendment rights. I'm not going to go too deep into that, but I'm sure you can visualize what I'm trying to say, what would happen. The American people would not be too happy about that.
Well, Katie might have some views on whether it's good living in the USA or not.
USSA, you mean?
You can go on that if you want, Katie.
I know how a lot of people believe that, like, America is the only country that is, like, comfortable to live, convenient, and all that stuff. And you probably seen my video in the bathtub where I'm saying that out of convenience, we give up our rights, our freedom. And that's exactly what's going on. Like, I lived in the States for 3 years almost. I moved to Mexico, and man, I will take bad roads anytime to crazy fucking cops that in a woman in New York State way. Fuck that. Like, yes, maybe it's not like streets are not clean, or I don't know. Maybe it's not that convenient to live here. You have to go out of your way and be more sovereign as an individual, which is a good thing. But I will take it any day that are like totally robbing us on everything we value in life.
Yeah, and as we were talking earlier today, or earlier about how today when we woke up and looked at Twitter, it was pretty shocking to see all the authoritarianism happening in, you know, in North America, whether it was that New York subway video or stuff happening in the UK or Canada, or just the FBI being allowed to search through all our internet data with no warrants. It's pretty scary, but you know, hopefully we'll hopefully more than just the minority that is us Bitcoiners will actually do something about it, not just be frogs in boiling water. But it seems like we're just mainly frogs. Nation of
pretty
frogs.
Ugly. And your Hydra on Twitter posted earlier today, there is no rules. There are strong men and weak men. And this is literally true. Like, all the rules are pretty much consensus, right? So, like, we let them do that. It's not because they have this right by birth or this right by, I don't know, some powerful enlightenment universe stuff. Like, we just let them have those rights. Until we resist, there's nothing going to change. We're just going to let them go further and further and further. And I've seen it, like, my parents lived in communism. And until you actually start resisting and start fighting it, like, nothing's going to change, unfortunately. And I'm all about, like, peaceful stuff. And, you say, like, nonviolent relationship. But at this point, like, they are doing violence towards people all the fucking time. And until we resist, there's nothing that can change. And I believe that's why Mexico is, like, doesn't see that at all. Like, there was no mandatory lockdowns here. There was no any craziness, because there is another powerful authoritarian kind of thing such as cartel. Government knows if they start fucking up, cartels will start fucking with them, and that's pretty much what stops them, because there's like different direction power. They just can't pull it up here.
Yeah, check and balances.
Yeah,
but before we get too dark, let's Nick, don't we have another question in the Discord?
Yeah, why wouldn't we go back to a gold standard?
Wow. It's just...
That's actually something that I wanted to say about coin education question as well. That's kind of aligned with my answer there. He asked if stock to flow is something money. And I wanted to mention that to flow and scarcity is what makes something store of value. But for being money, you need to have some other features. I think that Bitcoin has much more of those features to become money than gold. And the main one of them, which is actually also about stock to flow and scarcity, is sovereign money and radical ownership. How much gold is being owned on paper? And we don't really know if it's a full reserve, right? And Bitcoin have this radical ownership. You know that if you own it, like, it's not somewhere in Singapore in a vault, and it might not be there tomorrow because someone robs it. Here you have full control, and you know, like, that's yours. And that's one of the things that makes Bitcoin better than gold. Others such as transferability, divisibility, eligibility, all that stuff. Like, Bitcoin just has so many features gold doesn't to become a better money. But, like, it becomes clear once you realize all that.
Yeah, and also I wanted to touch on what a point you made is, if we were to go back to a gold standard, And, you know, they're obviously going to do what a gold standard is. They're going to keep the gold in banks and central banks. And gold, you can't, in today's modern age, you cannot go around trading gold bars for stuff. You're not going to walk into Starbucks and shave off, you know, part of a gold bar for your coffee. We're going to continue. We would continue with paper money backed by gold. But the thing is, and what Katie touched on is, who knows what the banks are going to do? They can just go back to doing the same thing they did before, not keeping full reserves and printing way more money than there is gold. And we could find ourselves back in the same exact situation. And it makes no sense. It's a no-brainer to... you don't want to trust them again. Why would you trust them when you could just use Bitcoin? And, you know, you don't really have to trust Bitcoin because the way the protocol is, it works, and it works a lot better than trusting banks.
Yeah, I've stated a few times that just going back to a gold standard, just like moving backwards in progress, and we already have a better alternative. And, you know, you can't send gold over the internet. So we're going into a digital world. It's just not going to work.
As well, like, as, you know, the Executive Order 6102, which was the confiscation of gold. I forgot what year it was. And it was in the early 1900s. 33, yeah. Can't really confiscate Bitcoin, or it's a lot harder to, I should say. I mean, technically, they could... you know, show up to your house and say, hey, give us your Bitcoin. But there, it is much easier to, let's say, hide it. And you could actually just tear up all your keys. I don't recommend this at all, but you could, in theory, tear up all your keys, break your hardware wallet, and remember your Bitcoin keys in your head as a brain wallet. They can't get that.
I actually think that everybody needs brain wallet, like, situation, and it's not that hard to remember, like, 12 words, let's say. Like, it's not hard at all.
Yeah, and that this is a perfect segue, because I tried to do some shilling this week with some of my friends, and one of the biggest knocks or questions that I got was the, you can't touch Bitcoin, like, how do you use it? And I just kept going on about how you use the internet every day, you use the cloud, like you do a lot of things that you can't touch, like you're on the cell phone and you can't touch it, but yet it still works, and you just need an interface to interact with it. And I don't think it was getting through when I was telling my friends that, but I think it's a common question that people new to Bitcoin will say.
I know how I like to respond to this. I'm like, well, USD is digital, like 85% digital.
Right.
There's no amount of USD that exists in the world. Like, there is maybe 15% of it exists in paper. Like, how do you touch it? It's just numbers in your account, in your bank account, or it's just numbers in your card. Like, use some... it's going to be custodial, but you can also use debit card for Bitcoin as well, like loaded with Bitcoin. It's the same thing. So again, we're coming to fractional reserve and how like banks in the United States have to hold only 10% in actual money, 10% reserve to what they actually give away in loans and numbers in debit cards of people who hold money in their banks and all that stuff. Like, it's just 10% of it, and the rest is just numbers in the fucking centralized ledger. And that's how we keep saying that money printer goes brr, but it's much easier than that. You don't have to do brr. You just have to change, add one fucking zero in your ledger, centralized, absolutely. I'm in BTC kindergarten. I'm cursing. Is it?
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, we curse all the time. It's technically probably not for children. It's more just to keep it simple.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
But yeah, no, I said the same thing to my friends, and I just got a blank stare, and they're like, "What do you mean? Like, I can pull it out to dollars?" And I'm like, "You can buy anything with Bitcoin. You just got to know how to do it." But anyways, you want to chime in, Nick, or do we have another topic? Yeah.
Also, like, my mom always says, like, I'll ask her to look into buying Bitcoin, and she'll say, "Well, where can I spend it?" And then when I say, like, not many places, she's like, "Okay, well, then I don't want it." And it's like, you know, chiming into what we were talking about earlier, you need to have a Bitcoin before it can be a good medium of exchange. It has to be a good store of value. And it's very volatile right now because it's early, and with the way the halvings work, by cutting the supply issuance in half every 4 years, people like to overshoot and pump up the price, and then it goes into this big bubble, then it drops down, but it keeps going up, and we're well on our way to having it be more stable. And once it's more stable, who knows what price that'll be, but merchants will be, the number go up for merchant adoption is going to be really big in the future. And I seriously cannot see a future where 20-30 years from now I'm still paying in dollars versus Bitcoin, because again, the hardest money always wins, and technology will find a way to get, you know, whatever problems Bitcoin may have right now, technology is gonna, like, there are so many smart people out there working on Bitcoin and just, you know, technology in general. Like, who would have ever thought, like, pre-2008 that some dude was sitting in his basement or whatever, you know, creating a cryptographic currency that the whole world could run on, you know, decentralized. It's just, there's, you know, people creating Lightning Network and state chains and other second layer solutions, and the future is really, really bright.
Yeah. And it actually brings us back to toxic ladies kind of stuff. You keep asking why not so many women in the space, and like, women will come after the merchant adoption, because women are the spenders of the family. Like, according to the statistic, they spend like 70% of family's money are being spent by women. So what, like, this is what your mom is looking for in terms of value for money. Can I spend it? Can I buy things with that? And this is when we will see a big move into, like, female world, kind of.
I'm so bullish right now, guys. So bullish. And this is another good segue, because I was going to bring it up earlier. Or actually, I have it on our notes. And it's this tweet that I saw from Bitcoin Tina, one of our favorite boomers out there. And it got me so bullish this week that I was just so hyped. Anyways, this is what he said. He says, "I expect this next major bull cycle to be a super cycle," all caps. Said the first mainstream run, much like the early major bull runs in Bitcoin, trying to buy an asset of fixed inelastic supply, and you will have to pay up. Few will be able to hold on. And I think that, like, you guys are right, and everyone, you know, this next run is going to get out of control. Like, we're going to, you know, have influencers claiming they're Bitcoiners, and we're going to have new influencers that are Bitcoiners, and, you know, it's going to be incredible. This is going to be some crazy stuff coming up.
It's toxic ladies. We just had this conversation in the chat. One of our girls posted something with she took Cardi B's lyrics and changed it into the Bitcoin topic. We're trying to make Cardi B see that, because she's like totally ready for it. She is not a Bitcoiner yet. She will be, because you probably seen her video like ranting about taxation and like, yeah, why the fuck are you taking my money and not using it efficiently whatsoever. So she's either a Bitcoiner or she will be. And yeah, definitely. Everybody's coming.
I have a recommendation for you. If you could she's been in the news a bit because she is a beauty YouTuber with over 1 million subscribers, and she recently fell down the rabbit hole and got into Bitcoin. Her name's Michelle Pham, and I know she did a thing with CoinDesk the other day, and I'm sure you've heard of her, but if you could reach out to her and get her in Toxic Ladies, that would be super dope.
Yeah, I was Foolish. Thinking about it. I definitely should get there. She actually, next day after the halving, she got on like mainstream media and was so perfectly articulated what the block reward and how it's being cut in half and how like Fed printing money and Bitcoin is getting harder. I'm like, good fucking job.
Yeah, she's been killing it.
She has a huge audience to Red Pill, and I got a feeling not many of them are Bitcoiners.
Not yet. Bunch of pre-coiners, though.
Bunch of pre-coiners, that's right. That's like Matt O'Dell says, like, there's like 7 point... whatever the population is, 7 point, you know, whatever billion minus the already, you know, existing Bitcoiners. They're all just pre-coiners. Let's and only go. 21 million for him.
Let's go. Dinez is in here. I'm pretty sure it was Dinez, and he sent me the website Bitcoins per person, and it was saying that if there was an equal share of Bitcoins per every person on planet Earth, it would only be something like 260,000 sats, so like 0.0026 Bitcoin. Is what the equal share of Bitcoins per person, and man, it's just so bullish. This is really gonna get insane. Bullish.
Totally.
Do we have any more comments in the Discord, Nick?
Let me check.
Wasn't there one about value, which is like a good segue with your friend said that on the Snapchat?
Oh, yeah. Primetime said, what gives Bitcoin its value?
And then tell a little story about your friend, and then we can get into it.
So my friend that I was talking about earlier, who hit me up on Snapchat about Bitcoin, he said crypto has no value. And to that, I actually agree. I think cryptocurrency, as in altcoins, not Bitcoin. Alt cryptocurrency, shit coins, don't have any value to them at all. Bitcoin, on the other hand, has a ton of value. You know, you can buy it right now for $10,000. And what makes Bitcoin valuable is two main things. One of them is Bitcoin's attributes of being unconfiscatable, having a capped supply, you know, being censorship resistant. What you can do with Bitcoin, it being an internet protocol where you can build pretty much anything you want on top of it, be able to store it offline and save your money better, be able to spend on second layer solutions like Lightning and do like 1 million transactions a second. It's just the technology is something so alien and like just out of this world. It's insane. As well as what gives it real world value, in addition to that, is the people who use it. People give it power. People give it value. If you put your hard-earned money into it and hold it, it raises the market cap. And, buying it raises the price, and sending it to people and people demanding more and more of it is going to, raise the value of it. And Bitcoin is only beginning. I don't even think Bitcoin has scratched the surface yet of the demand it's going to cause, if that makes sense.
Made sense to me. Do you want to add something?
Yeah, a lot of people get into Bitcoin because, like, they actually get in red field on all those features, like confiscatability, censorship resistance and stuff. then they get into crypto after that because they're like, yeah, insurance on blockchain, whatever bullshit on blockchain. And then, like, all you have to tell them is, like, go back to your first principles. Like, why in the first place you got into Bitcoin? Because all those features. And please now look at your shitcoin and realize that, like, is compromising those first principles. It's like, it's a trade-off always. Like, it's not going to be censorship resistant, or it's not going to be unconfiscatable. Like, one of them is going to be compromised for sure. And all those values, like, I really like this analogy. I don't know if it's a very popular book in it's at all, the Little Prince. In the Little Prince, they say, like, drunks person, God is wine. Businessman, God is money. And I think we can do the same analogy for Bitcoiners. Like, for Venezuelan people, Bitcoin is a great store of value because of its hard cap. For somebody who lives in police state, Bitcoin is the most valuable because of unconfiscatability. Oh my God, what the fucking word? Yeah. So for each of us, found like the most valuable thing about Bitcoin, but all those features together make it the perfect money. And I think that's why it's so valuable. Just remember your first principle, remember why it's so perfect, and that's how you're gonna be safe from shit coins.
Yeah, I like that Little Prince example because it reminds me of the blind man touching the elephant, and they all think it's a different animal because they're all touching different parts of it. Like, you know, the parts that are closest to them. And that's actually a really good example right there, Katie. And I just want to add that Bitcoin has value because humans have given it value. You know, like, there's subjective value. People have subjectively viewed it to be valuable and have thus put in their hard-earned wealth into it and believe in it and hodl. And here we are. We're touching 10K again. So it's a beautiful thing. I think are we out of topics? We're almost at an hour, so we can riff. But
does anyone in the chat want to unmute their mic and ask any questions or say any comments they have?
What's up, guys?
What up, dude?
What's up?
Sick show. Third time, so good.
OG, Bitcoin Kindergarten OG.
Yeah. It was actually getting back to that, I guess, Bitcoin per person comment. That like calculation alone makes me so bullish. Oh, man.
For real, right?
Because if you do, yeah, like if you do the math, it's about like 370 to 400 people's worth a Bitcoin for one Bitcoin. So imagine having one Bitcoin and you have basically the like total amount of 400 other people's money, like just sitting there on your wallet. Like,
you're in top 0.25%.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
yeah,
if you check that site, I think you only need like 0.72 or 75% of a Bitcoin to be in like the 0.0001% of the world based on world distribution. So most people will probably only have about, I think it's like $4 worth of Bitcoin, like based on wealth distribution. I don't know. It's just insane every time I think about it.
It makes you just like go crazy because it's like you can buy more Bitcoin right now for like you can buy like $20 worth of Bitcoin right now and have more than some people will ever own in their entire life.
Yeah.
I think I'm
going
to
do it. It's like super sad, but like cool.
Yeah. It's a really good comment about people thinking they're too late. No, you're not. Not by any means.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're listening to this now, like you're early.
Yeah, it's really crazy to think about. Imagine being in here like 2011, getting free whole bitcoins from faucets. Ugh.
Pizza, 20,000 bitcoins for pizza.
Yeah.
Dude, sorry, I was still in high school. didn't get into Bitcoin.
No, yeah, I was too. But it's still early. It's crazy.
I love seeing screenshots from all the way back then of people getting like 5 Bitcoin from a faucet, and it's just like, Jesus fucking Christ. That's like it's like 50 grand right now.
Well, but then it was a little more riskier bet. I feel like mm-hmm. now we have so much good education, you know, the knowledge has been spread out to everyone, and normal people like us, well, relatively normal people like us, can understand it and see the value prop in it, and it's just amazing. It blows my mind all the time that we're here right now, and you know, we're in this position. It's really humbling.
Mm-hmm.
That also like solidifies in my mind that altcoins won't be able to take over Bitcoin, or like, and also this is kind of like our only shot at Bitcoin, because no coin created today will ever have, it's impossible for that coin to go through the same exact organic growth that Bitcoin went through. You know, Bitcoin really had to go through, is this a joke? Or is this like an actual thing? You know, you got like cyberpunk nerds just, you know, buying and selling it online in, you know, 2010, 2011, you know, and then it started to catch on more and more, and people are like, wow, this isn't a joke. This isn't a game. This is a real fucking thing. And, yeah, like it just makes me, trust Bitcoin more. It makes me like it so much more that it went through those hard times, because it made it harder and a better money, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I was so bullish after last show. I think I'm just as bullish, guys. I might have to go do some sprints. Don't mean to cut you off.
I'm gonna stack for it right now.
I already did. Right, I already now. Stacked a couple dollars, guys. My bank account's slim, but I just stacked a little bit.
See, broke, but that rich.
Hey, let's go. Well, good having you join us, Dinesh. Always a pleasure. Much love.
I had a lot of fun.
Yeah,
you guys did great.
This was mm-hmm. awesome.
Thanks to everyone who came out. I know a few people left a little early, but I'm sure they had something better to do, but thanks again to all the OGs who come out all the time. Really means a lot.
Yeah, and if you're listening, if you're streaming this later, thanks for listening. We love you. We hope you get some knowledge out of this. And thank you, Katie. You killed it. All right, we're out, guys.